My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my good colleague, Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London, where he writes political economics, and most recently observing the troubled Chinese economy. Joe has many years in Hong Kong and Asia for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and his observations are most helpful for me to understand a mystery these last years of Xi Jinping, Belt and Road, especially because now and again I would run up into a project that the Chinese had financed with Belt and Road money, such as the cracking dam in Ecuador or the airport and port facility in Sri Lanka that nobody uses, thinking to myself, okay, this is China being aggressive and buying friends. And if it didn't come to anything, they have debtors and that'll give them power. I was wrong. Joe, a very good evening to you. Belt and Road, as you explicate in your most recent column, is something that the Chinese hadn't counted on, it going badly on them, and they want their money back. But before that, we have to get to why they created Belt and Road. They have surplus cash. Generally, that sounds like a good thing, but it's not. Why not, Joe? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, what we're talking about this evening is sort of the China half of a phenomenon that you and I have discussed in various forums for much of the past year, which is sort of, we have a lot of controversies right now about the shape of global trade flows and a lot of anxiety in the U.S. about over-reliance on imports from China. And the flip side of that kind of trade deficit in the U.S. is what's called a capital surplus, which is a big inflow of foreign capital to pay for all of the imports. And, we've talked a lot about that in the U.S. context, and now it's time to think about it a bit from China's perspective, because they have the trade surplus, but that also requires a form of capital deficit outflows of capital into the rest of the world. And the problem for China for a couple decades now has been, what are they going to do with all of that money? And I started thinking about this because my old college, the College of William and Mary, has a research center that recently published a report trying to add up at a microeconomic level all of the projects that China has lent money to over the past 20 years or so, between around 2000 and 2023. And these researchers came up with a cumulative number of about $2.2 trillion, which is an enormous amount of money that China has been lending out around the world. Sort of largely as a counterpoint to all of their trade surpluses, all of the goods and services that they've been exporting. And so you then have to ask, well, where is this money going? And the Belt and Road Initiative had been one answer. That was Beijing's attempt to use debt. Beijing would extend, acting as the banker, to finance the construction of infrastructure projects in developing countries. So, building a port in Sri Lanka or a road or a bridge in Pakistan and a highway or a railroad somewhere in Africa. Intent was that China would lend out all of this money and then, the countries would buy Chinese equipment and maybe even labor to build the projects. It has not gone according to plan now that people are starting to default. And so we discover in the instance of Belt and Road that this actually sometimes can become a curse instead of a strategic advantage for China.
And in not getting their money back, they both had to deal with the absurdity of the idea that if you gave money to dictators who had no responsibilities, they'd plunder it. It never occurred to them. Of course, there's another twist to this. As Joe has introduced me, you get Belt and Road, It's a leaky dam. You understand that. And the man who hired it then escapes because he's under indictment in Ecuador and he lives in Europe and he's outside of your reach. But Joe introduces me to the Chinese solution, which made it, if not worse, certainly not what they expected. They can take that extra money and lend it to legitimate organizations that do pay their money back, like American companies and European companies. Except something funny happened along the way. What happened to their plan to dominate the country, the companies they lend to?
Well, I think that the big problem that they've started running into is that other people are noticing that they are doing this. So this is one of the big surprises from that report from the researchers at the College of William and Mary that I mentioned. I think that a lot of people had internalized the fact that China was lending hundreds of billions of dollars to developing countries. I think what people hadn't entirely realized is how big some of the numbers involved in developed economies like the U.S. or the U.K., European Union member countries, how big some of the lending is in those places. Yeah, we're talking a cumulative, you know, several hundred billion dollars over the 20 years that these researchers were looking at. And in one sense, that's kind of surprising. In another sense, maybe it shouldn't be, because remember, this capital outflow from China is tied to their trade surplus. So you would expect that a lot of the capital is going to end up in the countries where they are also sending a lot of goods, you know, which is developed economies. So that's been going on. But, you know, there's also a lot of interesting data in this new research about the forms that this lending takes. So Beijing went through a period where they might lend money to a Chinese company's subsidiary in the U.S. or Europe in order for that subsidiary to finance the purchase of an American or European company. And this would be great for China because then they would have the ownership of that asset and they wouldn't just be the creditor, they would be the owner. And then you would have the possibility maybe of pilfering some of the technology in that company, you know, or sort of having the market insight that that sort of presence in the developed economy would give you, you know, once you were back in Beijing. But the trouble is that these arrangements have become more and more controversial. We see it all the time that there is a lot of controversy about Chinese ownership of American companies, of European companies, of American land or other assets. So the world is becoming a less hospitable place for that kind of investment. And so that then means that China's only option is to lend money. And, you know, a lot of the lending that they do now is becoming less and less about the sort of lending, you know, to provide the leverage that someone can use to acquire a company. Now it's just, you know, standard syndicated lending where the Chinese bank or lender will join a consortium with a bunch of other lenders in order to finance a particular project or buy a particular corporate, you know, bond issue. And, you know, that the Chinese are coming to appreciate that partly because it is safer economically. There is less risk of loss for them, which is the other worry that we don't think they have, but they do. And partly because it calls less attention to them politically, but it also means that really all they're doing is ponying up the cash and you don't get any kind of management control out of it. So it's not obvious to me that they're necessarily happy about the situation where they can only ever be the lender, but that is the political reality that they may be starting to face.
What was the thinking as to why they didn't put the money to work domestically to build up businesses?
Well, I think that they ran into a bunch of challenges with that, because that certainly would have been an option. But I think that they historically worried that allowing too much of that capital into the Chinese economy would prove destabilizing for the exchange rate. You know, it would cause an appreciation of the Chinese currency that they wanted to avoid. So a lot of this accumulation of pots of money that they can then disperse abroad is related to their attempt to stabilize their exchange rate. And they were also very worried that allowing too much of that capital into the Chinese economy would have been inflationary. Now, I mean, there are interesting questions about whether that's actually true. Because you could argue that if it had been private sector exporting companies that were repatriating that capital, they probably would have been using it for productive investments, and China might actually be more prosperous under this, could have, would have, should have been scenario than it actually is as a result of what Beijing ended up doing. But yeah, for various policy reasons, they were very nervous about allowing all of these export earnings to enter the Chinese economy. And so they have made a conscious decision that they were going to ship it overseas.
And Joe, there's anxiety about calling their loans. Why?
Well, this is another part of the picture that is really interesting to think about, because I think that particularly with something like the Belt and Road Initiative, where they seem to be throwing their fiscal weight around with developing countries, I think there was often an assumption that it was a form of debt trap diplomacy, that you make the developing country very indebted to China. And then when that country goes bankrupt, that gives Beijing a lot of power to control the terms of the bankruptcy process and extract political favors. But that isn't really what China has been doing a lot of the time. Usually their real anxiety is to just get their money back. And that suggests that really they are worried about the consequences for their own financial system of starting to require their companies and banks to write down any of this foreign lending. And so, you know, the point here is we often argue about China's ability to send capital overseas as a great strength. In some ways it is, but in other ways it's a vulnerability. And I think it's more useful to think about the situation as a damaging codependence for both sides, for China and for countries like the US or the European Union, rather than assuming that one or the other naturally has a huge advantage over the other.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London writing about his observation of Chinese debt management. However, there's a bigger story in London right now, which is the eve of the fall budget to be published by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, and the Labour Party, where there's anything but peace. When we come back, is Keir Starmer really in trouble? Question mark. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of network busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.